everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Wonner Podcast. It's the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend,
Kramer England.
All righty. Okay, so we went and saw, from Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza, Warfare this week. It's in theaters right now from A24. It kind of feels like what happened here is Garland had some you know, consultants when he was making Civil War with A24 that were military guys that were helping him to get his military sequences for Civil War down in a way that felt really realistic. And he forged a relationship with some of these guys. And one in particular, Ray Mendoza, had this story that he told him. And I think that Garland just went, that's a movie right there. Let's just make that. And the two of them just collaborated on this film. And basically, it's just a movie about this one operation that this guy went on with his platoon and in Iraq. And this movie, for the most part, is getting very good reviews. We're gonna get a plot breakdown here, so there will be a spoiler warning here. We're gonna just speak generally for a minute. I just want to say up top, I really recommend seeing this film in theaters if you haven't already. I thought this movie was fantastic. I thought it was just excellent.
It was extremely well made, and it did its job very, very well. For sure. And it's very, as we kind of talked about a little bit before, like, it is very effective with an A. It will affect you in one way or the other. And it's just stayed with me because I saw it yesterday. I saw it last night. And I just keep thinking about it, just like how brutal it is.
There's a similar critique of this film that I see that I also saw when Civil War came out that I didn't agree with it with Civil War, and I don't agree with it here. And it's that both films are light on traditional character development. Both Civil War is also a film that just sort of drops you right in the middle of a situation. And a lot of people felt like the movie could have been a lot better if we had gotten more context for who these characters are, how they relate to each other, how, you know, what their personal politics are and their personal beliefs are, so we can kind of know what the stakes are for them. And I disagree with it less in Civil War than I do here, but I still felt like with Civil War, Garland is a good enough visual storyteller that I can get a lot about a character off of a look or off off of a single line. And I felt like I didn't need to be spoon-fed as much with the characters in Civil War or in this. I felt like I can make inferences based off of actions they would take in certain scenarios. And I kind of like that Civil War and this film are less prescriptive in that way. They're not trying to, I mean, basically this movie in particular, Warfare, has a very atypical structure. And that's a thing that we talk a lot about on this show, but it's not a typical like three act structure where, you know, you've got, it might have some things that are structurally there, but for the most part, similar to Tombstone that we talked about last week, because this is based on memory, it's just unfolding as it unfolded in,
it really does. And the structure, like I wasn't paying too much attention, but it does hit certain things, but it's like art imitating life. Like I'm sure that's kind of how battles go anyway. Like and it really just focuses on this one battle, this one event that takes place. I think what you're talking about with I don't know what to call it, but it's more like a slice of life, and it's not a slice of life, but like, it's just taken, here's beginning and end. It's pretty much real time. Besides the very first part, it's real time. And this was like a true story based on Ryan Mendoza's experience. Right. So, and his platoon's experience. So I think that works really, really well. And I think people understand that better. Now, I have not seen I haven't seen Civil War.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest problem that Civil War has is, for take it with a grain of salt, from an outside perspective, is that it's a high concept it's a high concept idea about something that has not happened.
Right.
And so I think people were expecting more spectacle, more, more taking a stance and doing those things. So their expectations, I think, were that way. With this, it's a lot better because it's just, this is what happened. Like, we're just kind of, we wanted to make a movie about how intense, you know, war is. So yeah, I think it's a little bit, you get a little bit more of a slide for that.
Yeah, definitely. Another big criticism with Civil War is that the people wanted Garland to take a more definitive political stance. They wanted him to say something about the ideological political divide in America and have more of a firm stance. Yeah. Again, I believe it's in there. I believe it's in the film, and I actually think it's not terribly subtle also, if you're actually paying attention, if you've watched that movie. This movie has another thing like it, where people kind of are saying, now, like you said, this movie, you call it slice of life. I've heard people call this movie an experience, that it's it's an immersive experience. It almost feels like a documentary or something, where they're just showing you, here are the events, here's what happened. But it really feels like the reason why I think this is a good movie to see in theaters is it's a sensory experience. It's a really immersive sensory experience. Yeah. My brother told me he had to put earplugs in halfway through the movie because it was hitting him so hard, which I get that a lot of people have talked about the sound mixing in this film. It is technically really, really well structured. And it hits hard the way that it should. But going back to this idea of like, character development lacking, because I've heard people say, they go, I don't care about what's going on in this movie because I don't know who any of these people are. And for me personally, I just kind of feel like if you can't get, and hey, to each their own, it's art is, that's why we have our subjective score at the end of this show. But if you can't get hooked into a story like this, knowing that it's someone's true life experience, if there's no character in here that you can, you know, project yourself onto, whether it's the family whose home is being invaded or the interpreters who are, you know, working for these guys against their will, or the new guy, or, like if there's no one in here that you can, you know, kind of latch into and say, okay, that's my point of reference, or just knowing that like, this is the world you live in. This is the state of modern warfare. This is what it looks like currently in Gaza. This is what warfare looks like, is overhead aerial shots from drones of, you know, body heat signatures from bodies and things like that. If you can't on some level latch into that without some kind of prescriptive traditional character development where they're like, and now we're going to show this guy FaceTiming with his girlfriend back home and she's going to hold up like the sonogram of their newborn baby that's on the way. I'm like, I don't need all that to latch into what this movie is offering personally.
No, and I totally agree. And I think honestly, like there's the smaller platoon, right? That one, we get to know pretty much every one of those characters.
Yeah.
And it is very subtle, but it says a ton when you know what you're looking for, right? Like, so the sniper, and I don't know, I don't remember all their names. And again, like you said, to each their own. Like, if you didn't like it, I understand. But like, I got who these characters were pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Like the sniper, let me see if I can find his name. He's Cosmo Jarvis is the actor, right. And he's Elliot is his name in the movie.
Yeah.
You got who he was like pretty quickly. He's looking through a sniper, and then he's with the other sniper. The other sniper has a chance to take a shot, but he doesn't. Mm-hmm. Right. And then over the radio, someone says weak, you know, and then the other Elliot comes over and he looks at him. He's like, what happened? He's like, oh, I couldn't take a shot. And he's like, weak.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like, he's that guy. Like, he's going to kid around with everybody. Also, when he gets off of the like mattress thing, he looks over at Ray, the character who's playing Ray Mendoza. And he just stares at him. You know, just kind of like gives him a look. Yeah. And I was like, I know that guy.
Oh,
I know that guy.
No, totally. There are moments with each one of these characters. And this is what I mean when I think that Garland is a good enough visual storyteller. I also think that like this, one thing that I think this movie really did right, because it sort of reminds me of that film that Clint Eastwood made about the Marines who took over the train that was being hijacked by terrorists. You know what I'm talking about? And he had the actual guy. I'm not talking about American Sniper. I'm talking about the film that was, there was a train that was being taken over by terrorists and these Marines jumped into action. These Marines that were like on vacation, and he had the actual guys play themselves in the film.
That's right. Yeah.
And so it's similar to that in that he's trying to draw on the real life experience of these guys. Or there was like a Navy SEAL movie that came out, I want to say like 10 years ago, that did a similar thing where it used the actual guys.
Yes.
Who, and they played themselves. And I think it's smart that Garland uses a cast of world-class actors in this movie.
Because
we got Will Poulter, who we just talked about in Death of a Unicorn. He's great here. And we've got Cosmo Jarvis, who is fantastic in this movie. We've got Joseph Quinn, who does a really nice job. We've got a really well-rounded cast of actors who all have moments with just like a look or a line, or they all get these little beats where I get locked into, okay, I know who this guy is. I know who this guy is.
Yep.
And I don't need much else. And I think that I feel the same way about the movie Civil War. And also, as we'll get into the plot breakdown, I'm going to talk about the fact that, like, I do believe that there are political or, you know, like, I guess you call it a personal morality commentary on the ethics of warfare and the morals of warfare, I think is in here. I think there is commentary being made here. It's just not necessarily beating you over the head with it. And it is open enough that somebody could go watch this movie and think, oh, this is a rah-rah American propaganda film about a very unpopular war. And it's showing us, but I don't think it is that. And I think we should just get into our plot breakdown here for this film, because it's a pretty straightforward movie. Yeah. And so this is a spoiler alert. We are going to be talking plot details of Warfare. Again, go see this movie in the theaters if you have not already. But I really like the way that this movie opens.
Yeah.
It's our one kind of moment to be with these guys before.
Yeah.
You
really get a sense that they are, I mean, they're in a war. They're watching a music video, and they have a moment where you kind of get to like see that they're all kind of friends, at least in one way or another. They're kind of like just joking around, right? And they're all excited. So it gives us that moment to be like, oh, okay, this is really interesting, and kind of latch onto them.
Yeah. And structurally, this feels like a prologue kind of, because I feel like the real first shot of the film is the next shot after this. So we have this little prologue, which is the boys are all in a tent watching a music video. And what we learn later is this is kind of like almost like a hype up ritual. Like they know they're going out on a dangerous mission. And before they go out, they're all going to kind of do a little party, which I feel like from everybody that I know who's ever done a tour in the Middle East, they talk about stuff like this, about the moments where they would try to like, where they, you know, they'd watch sports together, or they'd watch YouTube, and because this is warfare in the modern era with the internet and stuff. So they're watching this music video and they're all like, you know, dancing together and rocking and rolling. Yeah. And again, character, the one person who's in the back, who's not getting as he's dancing, but he's not getting as into it, is Will Poulter's character. And we don't know yet, but Will Poulter is the commanding officer of this platoon. He's the guy in charge. So while he's like, I'm glad we're all, you know, having a good time and being buds, he also knows it's my job to make sure everybody gets home safe.
Yeah.
And so you can see from the jump that he takes his responsibility a little more seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and just out of necessity, it's like, I've got to make sure at least one of us is staying.
Yeah. You know, kind of level-headed, but he is having fun. Like he's smiling and he's, you know, letting them be who they are.
Yeah.
And then like, it's pretty crazy, 'cause it's like, you know, they're all jumping and dancing, and then it just cuts.
And this to me is like the first shot of the movie.
Yeah.
This is
totally.
You know, 'cause it's also, it's bookended at the end of the film, but it's just like, I love this shot. I immediately was like, I love stuff like this. Like it's just a shot of this street in a town, in a random town in Iraq, in the middle of the night. and it's dead. There's no noise. You can't hear anything. And slowly the frame just starts getting filled on both sides by these Navy SEALs that are just sort of slowly walking in, you know, quietly through this town. And it's like immediately the tension is on because immediately you're just like, okay, I don't know where we are and I don't know what we're doing. And that's also a big part of this movie too, is that the movie is not like, here's the stakes of, we never even find out what the mission even is.
No,
you know, likely because the details of it are probably classified. And so it's just like, we can't tell you what we were there doing. But also I think that that's part of when I talk about how I think that there is some kind of commentary being made in this film. It's like, it's not important what they're there doing. Like it does. These young men are tools. They are, they're instruments of the state. They are just told to go somewhere and they go there.
I think you're right. I think you could definitely see it as something like that. And I think this, they find a house and they're all, they basically say, okay, this is the house that we're going to go to. We're going to take it over. They go in quietly. They get the person on the first floor and they're like, just, they have two Iraqi soldiers with them, or I don't know if they're Iraqi, whoever who they're helping them.
Arab guys that speak the language of the natives and they're translators, which is, was very common for, you know, platoons would go around with translators.
So those two guys are telling him like, just be calm, we're just, you know, and they get them. And then they're like, they try to go upstairs, but there's a wall. And so they have to break down the wall. And after that, I was actually, because I was thinking a lot about the structure as well. And I feel like this might even be the inciting incident when they break down the wall. Because
that gives away their position.
Yes, that's what they say. They're like, that gave away. Anyway, they break down, it's like a cinder block wall that is another apartment. So they break it down and the father of the area gets his wife and his two daughters and just, you know, they basically take over that part. And then the next 20, 25 minutes, nothing happens. And I gotta say, I mean, nothing happens in the sense that there's no action.
Yeah.
There's tension building, but I loved this. I love that they did that. Yeah.
Even I want to go even to a little quick beat in this opening sequence before they go into the house.
This is so
like, you know, like this movie's constantly reminding us that even though these are highly trained individuals who have been they're still kids. And that's that prologue of them like dancing to the music video. But it's like they're walking down the street and it's this very serious, very tense kind of, they're all in formation. But then these two guys look at each other from across the street and they start doing like, they're like humping at each other. Like they're like doing little like humping dances, you know? And it's like, you're reminded like, oh yeah, these guys are like, this is like me. This is like me and my friends. They're trying to find moments to just, and it's the way that soldiers will try to find moments to sort of normalize the situation that they're in. They're not going to, you know, give away the position and make a bunch of noise, but they will goof around. And it's kind of like that moment you talked about of Cosmo Jarvis standing up and looking at the guy and being like, you know, and just sort of messing with people. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of sort of like, you know, kind of like
personality traits that they bring out that kind of gives them character.
Yeah.
And I mean, though, that part really gave, cause I think one of them was Cosmo Jarvis. I think he was the one that started, but anyway,
yeah, probably
you get an idea of who he is.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think you're right that them having to break down this cinder block, cause it's like two apartments that are on top of each other and they're separated by a cinder block wall, and they break down the wall with a sledgehammer, which is also an important prop that comes back up later. That my brother asked me a question about it. Now when we get to that, I'll ask you about it. But I also like in this movie and in the movie American Sniper, I feel like they both did a really good job of, without, I mean, maybe you could argue that the movie should spend more time on these families, but I feel like the disposability of Arab life and of Arab people, that it's just sort of like, hey, you're kind of just in our way. You're just sort of in, we're going to come in and take over your house. Yeah. And the rationale for a lot of this stuff was these people knew they were in an active war zone where a war was actively taking place. They were given warnings, you know, daily that like, you should evacuate, you should leave because there are, you know, Taliban factions in your town, and there will be American military showing up and doing, you know, and like, if you don't want to be a part of that, you can leave. But again, that's, it's so much easier said than done to just tell, like, when you try to imagine it being your neighborhood, that all of a sudden people roll through with loudspeakers just going, hey, get out of here, we're going to come in with the, and it's like, not everyone has the ability to just uproot their entire life and take off. And so I have so much empathy for these people who are sleeping in the middle of the night. And it's so terrifying the way that they just get woken up in the middle of the night with guys with guns. And those guys are going, it's okay, calm down. Don't yell, don't scream. And the translators are going, don't scream, don't yell. And they're like, okay. So, you know, but it's like, how utterly terrifying. And then the people on the upstairs apartment, they wake up to, you know, their wall getting broken down by a sledgehammer. And it's like, it's just so the kind of the inhumanity, the disposability of the Arab characters. And we see more of that later on in the plot, but immediately kind of the way that the American military is sort of conditioned and trained to just be like, walk right over these people. Like, they are in your way. They're an obstacle in the way of completing the mission. If they are jeopardizing the mission, you have the authority to kill them. If they're like, you know, like that's, we have the, and I just, it is, again, I think that you can make an argument that maybe the movie should spend more time with those characters. But I also think that the fact that it doesn't, it's like, that's also in and of itself, a statement, in my opinion.
No, I could see that. And I think that's a different movie if you focus on the Arab family, which could be very interesting. But this movie is not. It's saying it without saying it, right? It it gives them enough time to see that, like, because I thought that too. Like, what if somebody came into my house and just took it over like they did? Like, that would be a horrible, horrible thing.
So scary.
It was there. Like, it was there enough for me and obviously you and I'm sure a lot of other people to kind of empathize with their situation.
Well, and that's why I have a hard time just seeing this movie as like a straight up propaganda, rah, rah, go America.
No.
I don't see, even though we are, I can empathize with a lot of our main characters, our American soldiers. I think what I'm more critical of, and I actually think I wouldn't be surprised if Ray Mendoza is critical of this, is just the American war apparatus and the way that it utilizes young men as just tools of its agenda, just blunt force instruments of its agenda. And I feel like Ray Mendoza, I don't know the man's personal politics, but I would not be surprised if his view of it later in life is, you know, a little more
possible.
A little more critical, or, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. But so,
You're right. So then we go into the next day, and basically what we've got is on the upstairs level, the upper deck of this double, you know, this apartment building, we've got a sniper that has, they've made a little hole in the wall, and they're watching this building, and they're all just sort of on the upper deck, kind of in different positions. They're doing radio comms with drones that are flying overhead and with another platoon that's in another location. And they're all, it's just sort of like the calm before the storm. And you can feel that tension sitting in the audience that it's like, well, this is not going to last. Like, this is going to.
It lasts a long time, which again, I really liked that because I felt like what they were saying with that is like, there's a lot of just, I mean, and I don't know, I've never been in war. I don't have anyone really close to me that has been in war, but a lot of it is just kind of sitting around waiting, right? And so you have this kind of like, you know, it starts out with this tension of taking over this house, and then it's just like dull, and it feels like it takes a long time. But I'm sure that that is exactly what it's like, you know, when you're in a war zone. You just got to do what you're told and wait till something happens.
Yeah, you move to a position, and you sit there, and you wait, you know?
And that's just kind of like everybody's just kind of waiting around, and they are getting, but the tension is always rising. Every time it's just a little bit more, just a little bit more, right? Like,
yeah, we're mostly following the building tension through the eyes of the scope of the sniper.
Yes.
Because we're seeing more and more things happen at this location that look like maybe something's about to go down. You know?
Yeah. They see, you know, somebody kind of looks over in their direction and, you know, they're kind of, someone's looking out the window and they're like, I wonder if people are on top of the roof. Like, they're all close together. So they're kind of worried about that. And then another guy kind of like peeks through a window and is looking directly at the hole that they have. And like, so everything kind of like slowly escalates. And then,
well, and like you said, you know, Elliot, who's the guy who's been on the rifle, he kind of sees that he's out of dip, you know, tobacco. Yeah. So he asks his friend, he goes, hey, can you take over the rifle for a little bit? I got to stand up and stretch, which again, this is these things like these snipers would sometimes be sitting there for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours at a time, moving on their stomach, you know, holding their position up against a rifle. And he gets this guy to take over for him. And it's, you know, I think the sort of situation that's, like you said, these guys roll up in a car and one guy gets out and he is holding what looks like an RPG, maybe like an
assault rifle, some sort of
he's got a weapon.
Yeah.
And the guy that's on the gun, has an opportunity to take a shot, doesn't take it. And like you said, Elliot says weak and the guys over the radio say weak. But the question is like, if Elliot had been there, would he have taken the shot? And then the question is also like, is that better for them? Would it have been better if he had taken the shot from a distance? Would they have had a, you know, better chance at defending their position if they had been the ones to initiate contact?
Right.
And who knows?
Yeah. You know? And I think you're totally right. The other thing that I thought was very interesting too is it gave a lot of character to the soldier who did not take the shot. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he was I can't remember what his name was, but he was always like really scared. He wasn't like a coward. He did what he was supposed to, but he was hesitant. And through the whole thing, you know, he's like trying to do everything he can, but he's obviously it's a very scary moment. So that, you know, he's a hesitant person. It tells you a lot about him as a character. At least I felt like immediately I was like, okay, he's a little scared. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and you kind of go, what would I do in that?
Position? Yeah, exactly.
Sitting there watching. Oh, that guy's got a gun. Are you just supposed to just go? Is it just, do you have to have that instinct of, you know, and you know, they use all of this military terminology throughout it. They say MAMs at one point, which is military aged males. Mm-hmm. And or I think they might even say MAMs. Like but like basically what happens is as more and more guys start showing up at this location that they're looking at, all of a sudden the guys at this building start making an announcement in the street. And they're using loudspeakers to yell something into the street.
Yeah.
And you can kind of hear people yelling and the translators come up and go, hey, it's not good. And they go, what? And they go, they're telling everyone to get inside their houses because they're about to do a jihad.
Yeah.
And they're like, so they're telling everyone to, they're like, so they're probably coming over here.
Yeah.
And so those guys are like, all right, cool. We are breaking out and we are going to roll out of this location. But so they start calling in, backup to come pick them up from where they are so that they can get out of the building. And as they're starting to sort of get their stuff together, and this moment, I mean, this was, I don't know about you, but like me in the theater when this happened, because they've got it, Elliot's back on the gun, he's back on the sniper rifle, he's looking out this hole, and all of a sudden a grenade just casually gets lobbed into the little hole that he's looking through. And I in the theater went, oh no. And it just is like, it's like that. It's just like, oh, you know, and he just kind of goes, oh, and you know, and he's trying to like get up off the mattress that he's on. And it's so fast. This grenade goes off. And pretty much from this moment to the end of the film.
Yes.
The foot is on the gas.
Yeah. It does not let up.
Yeah.
It was crazy. This scene. So I went, it was the theater was packed.
Yeah.
I saw it on a Tuesday. So the theater was packed, and it was mostly young men. And it was, I could almost kind of feel people getting restless. Like when's something going to happen. Right. And when that hit, everybody stopped and everybody was totally focused the entire time. It was the same thing. Like once the grenade went through, everybody was like, oh, you know, somebody, you could hear it, that everybody was.
I even heard one reviewer refer to it as a jump scare. And I was like, it kind of was.
I see that. Yeah.
It kind of was like, cause you're just sort of lulled into this state of like, all right, what's, you know, and then when that grenade comes through, it's just like, oh no.
Yeah.
Like,
it's, you know. Oh, here we go. Yeah. And it the grenade goes off, and it's not it wasn't a big explosion. Like it injures Elliot, but not a ton, just enough that they want to get him out. He's got like something on his arm. Bleeding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, but there were two other soldiers in the room and they were fine. I think it just gets them, you know,
rattles them.
Totally.
For sure. You know,
totally.
Yeah.
And so then they start getting, and this is something I really liked as well. And we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but everything seems very, very to the procedure. Like mm-hmm. they're using military language. They're following the book. It's not like, it's heightened reality, but it's not like over the top, right? Like it is very much like what they would do in a situation like this, like what SEALs would do in this situation.
Yep.
And there was also a movie called Greyhound with Tom Hanks. It was about submarines. They're crossing World War II. And I felt it was very similar because they did the same thing. They weren't going for like over the top drama. They would follow the procedures that the Navy actually did. And I really liked it because it made it feel more realistic, and it made it, because they're like, hey, we got to get out of here. We have somebody injured. And they're like, well, we're 5 minutes away. And it's like, can they not get here sooner? You know, like in a movie, it just would just,
yeah, cut, you have to just
go there.
You have to just take what it's like. We have to take whatever time window we're given, but also, yeah, like, you know, that's one thing I was going to say at the beginning of the episode that I forgot to say is like the war epic the last A24 movie we covered, Death of a Unicorn, we were talking about how A24 is one of the studios that is still championing original films, original IP. Yeah. And this is, you know, the war epic is a well-worn genre. There are several made every year. Uh-huh. Like it's rare to see a year go by without at least one big war movie coming out from one of the major studios or somebody making some kind of war epic, if not several. And it's usually a pretty successful genre. Yep. But I think one of the things I really liked about this movie is it managed to make a well-worn genre feel new in a way. Yeah. It felt like it was doing something novel with it, something that, and all it was really doing is just saying, instead of trying to, you know, craft make a movie out of this, let's just put you let's just make it the title is just warfare. We're just going to give you the experience, the visceral sensory experience of, because we're really in one location for most of the movie.
Oh yeah.
We, the audience, don't ever really leave this apartment building. And that's also really interesting to be like, you're going to be pinned down in this one location for most of the film.
Yeah. And it pretty much is a chamber piece. And I agree. This movie in many ways, this movie felt a lot like Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
But mainly just the first part of Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. Saving Private Ryan is definitely like, I love that movie. It changed war movies. You know, this is also, I think, very influenced by that movie in some ways. But in Saving Private Ryan, the first, you know, 30, 45 minutes on Omaha Beach and storming in Normandy, right? It's very real. They don't hold back. It's horrible. It's scary. It's really visceral, right? And this movie is basically that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it just makes you think like, you know, it gives you an appreciation. Saving Private Ryan really gave, I mean, that came out when we were really young, but I was like, oh my gosh, like that was crazy. Like, how horrible would that be? Right. It gives you that sense of like, this is a horrible situation. And this movie, Warfare, it gave me that same feeling. Like, oh my gosh, this is like so crazy because it feels so real.
Well, and because it's real people sharing their real life experiences, like you're watching people experience lifelong trauma in real time.
Exactly.
And you can see it happening to them, not just physically, but psychologically. You can see their like brain chemistry changing in real time. You know, there's a new guy that, and again, like this movie in our 25 minute, you know, period of like the lull, the calm before the storm, before that grenade goes through, we see Joseph Quinn and he's like, he's doing pushups. We don't know yet that he's like the medic. We find that out later, but he's sort of in one room doing pushups and he's just trying to keep himself primed. We see that Will Poulter is kind of at the command, you know, we're like, okay, so Will Poulter must be in charge of everything. Mm-hmm. We see what's his name? Gandolfini's son, James Gandolfini's son is the guy. He's on the radio. And so he's our like comms guy. We see Mendoza, who's also helping out with the comms. We see the sniper team. And then we see this one guy who's kind of wandering around and he's sort of like asking everybody like, how you guys doing? How you guys, you know, and then and what somebody goes, new guy energy, you know, and you can tell that like, he just sort of doesn't really know where he should be. And he's, and it's maybe one of his first tours. And that guy too, like when we follow him once the grenade comes in and once bullets are flying and we see, you know, when we get a good look at that guy's face, we see like, oh, this guy is being forever changed. And that's another thing is that Cosmo Jarvis, after that grenade goes off, the way that his character responds to trauma, where he's not really, he doesn't really elevate. He kind of just walks out and like puts his arms up and he's like, hey, I need to get checked for blood, you know? Yeah. And they're like, you all right? He's like, yeah, I'm all right. You know, he's just like, I just, you know, but he's very, he just sort of responds to it like, you know, got my, but like.
Well, he's like, I got to get my stuff, like go get my stuff and we'll get out of here.
And he tells the new guy, he's like, hey, get in there, get my stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And he just, but also that's a big thing in this movie too, that we get to learn so much about the American military's procedures of you don't leave gear behind. Yeah. And it's a big deal in this movie that they do not abandon their gear. That like they can't just go, hey, we need to get out of this room. They need to make sure that everything is put away. So they need to put away all their computers and all of their, they can't just leave the stuff out and say, let's get the hell out of here, which is what a rational person would do. A rational person would do say, let's get to cover as quickly as possible. They've got to put everything away first, make sure they've cleared all the rooms of all of their gear. Yep. Make sure they haven't left any gear out, and then they can go downstairs. And that's sort of the big thing. That's the order that Will Poulter gives is let's collect everything and let's go down to the lower deck because the upper deck is compromised because we've got people on the roof and we've got guys on the balcony. So they've got to like collapse the upper deck and get downstairs. And the last thing that they do, and we've seen this teased earlier, it showed there was a shot of like the railing outside and the railing had all these claymores on it. Mm-hmm. Claymores, if you don't know, they're the kind of things that say on the front of them, they say like front toward enemy, you know, and it's like, it's basically just like a mortar, like artillery, like it's a bomb that, you know, it's like a plastic explosive type of thing. Yeah. And they have those all over the outside railings of the upper deck of this building that they're in. And the last thing they do before going down or I think they go down and then they set off all the claymores on the upper deck.
I think you're right. Yeah.
So that if there's anybody up on, and this, you can immediately see again, like talking about how we see the trauma in real time, you can see that Will Poulter's character is really rocked by the force of these claymores.
Yeah.
That, and again, it's like, I don't know if you've ever, I don't know how much shooting you've done, but it's amazing how much force guns actually make. Yeah. In movies, we just see people shooting shotguns and shooting guns. But like the reason why this movie's so loud is to try to give you that sensory experience of there's a reason why people get concussions from the force of this kind of artillery. And what you can see with Will Poulter's character is like, it looks like he gets a concussion from the claymores.
Yeah, he's pretty out of it after. Yeah.
Yeah, and he hasn't been shot. It's not like he's just like his brain gets rattled by the force of being in the middle of several explosions that are all going off simultaneously. Yeah. And it's kind of amazing that this doesn't happen to more people, that more soldiers don't just go, oh, I can't function right now because I'm concussed. A bomb just went off next to my head, you know, whether any of the shrapnel hit me or not, the force of it, the seismic force of it.
Yeah.
Smacked me in the skull, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually really like that. And Will Poulter played it really well because he is trying to continue to lead everybody and he's having trouble speaking.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like something happened, you know, and he's trying to get everybody to go and everybody do what they're supposed to. Like finally the tank comes in.
Yeah.
And they get all in a line and they all go outside. The first two people are.
This is another moment. Yeah. The way that they do this, that like they tell their interpreters, you guys are going to go first and kind of make sure it's all clear. And then we're going to come out in a line behind you. And the interpreters are like, what?
Yeah. They don't want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they're like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, I don't want to go out there.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you're going to do it. You're going to go out, you know, And this moment like kind of broke my heart because the interpreters go out into the street and then the new guy starts to go out. And I think it's Elliot or someone grabs him and goes, hold on, wait.
I think it's Joseph Quinn. I thought Joseph, it was him, I can't remember.
Yeah. Grabs him and goes, wait, like let the interpreters go out first. And basically what they are trained to do in this moment is say, those guys are expendable.
Yeah.
And again, this whole thing of like the gear being really important that like you can't leave gear behind. I kept feeling like there was this metaphor of the United States soldiers are also seen as gear to the military, that they are seen as like indispensable. Like we have invested so much money and time into training you that we do not want to lose you. You're a very valuable, expensive asset to the United States military. These interpreters are guys that we haven't spent nearly as much money and resources training. So they're more expendable than you are. And everything is, it kind of comes down to like the brass tacks and like the business of war, but
I mean, it is, that's what they do. They send them out and, I definitely, I mean, it was a really well crafted scene.
Yeah.
They go out and then they're like, okay, now we can go. They go out and they get the door opens on the tank and they get to the tank. Cause they say, okay, we're going to put Elliot in the tank and then we're all coming back inside. Mm-hmm. That was the plan. That's what they were going to do. They all get out to the tank. Once they get to the tank, an IED explodes.
Yeah.
And it is huge.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, all the dust, like
this was another huge jump scare for me. This was another, like, I didn't see this coming and I was rattled in my seat from this. Yeah.
Yeah. And it really is like, I mean, it's a big, and I mean, it looks very well shot. It looks really cool. And it's also very well edited in this scene just because it goes off. You could ultimately say that this is now we're in act two. Like,
sure.
This is pretty much like this is now they have to deal with this. And this is what they have to, they're
because up until this point, the worst thing was Elliot had a cut arm.
Exactly.
And they got all their gear out of the house. Their backup had shown up and they were going to get in these things and get out of there.
Yeah.
But now this IED goes off
this is where it gets a little bit more. This is probably the only part of the movie that I felt like was a little more, they took a little more creative license.
Sure.
But it's not much, but all it is just you can't really hear. It's all like, it's kind of like, you know, through a, you know, it sounds like that.
This is kind of a trope. We've seen in war movies that when bombs go off, we go to the ringing of the ears and the, you know,
which it's a trope for a reason, because I'm sure that's what it's probably like, you know,
Very
like disoriented.
Movie, the sound mix of this movie is trying to give you the sensory experience.
Exactly.
And so part of that is, after this IED goes off, like we're not going to hear for a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so everybody kind of starts waking up, but, Joseph Quinn is, I think he's the first one to really wake up, and he looks over and one of the interpreters is blown in half.
Yeah.
And you can just see the upper half of his body, which is very disturbing.
It's very grisly.
Yes. Very good. And this movie is very graphic. It's very graphic, but it's very realistically graphic. So he's kind of like, like he doesn't really know what's going on. And he looks over and then he looks down at his legs, and his legs are just, one of them, it's not really going the wrong way, but it doesn't look like it should
be
that way.
We can't fully see everything that's wrong with his legs yet, but we can tell his legs. And really what sells this is his reaction, because he's the medic. We've learned at this point, he's our guy that's sort of checking people. But he just, as he looks at his legs, he just slowly starts saying, "Oh my God. Oh my God."
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, and you realize he knows, uh-oh. And it's kind of that, like he's in shock at first of like, oh, I think I just lost my legs. I think, you know,
from this point on, I mean, he screams. All he's doing, he screams really, really loud, and he is screaming the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
like,
there's probably 40 minutes left in the film, and Joseph Quinn does not stop screaming for the rest of the movie.
And he is like, and I felt like, I was like, wow, that is really good performance, because I mean, that's gonna be hard. I mean, it was days and days and days of him just having to scream. Mm-hmm. That is like a really hard thing to do. And I could feel I could see that he is very much in pain. So Joseph Quinn does an amazing job in just making you feel like this is like the worst pain ever, which it probably was. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, he's the one who wakes up. They get him back inside. I think it's Will Poulter gets him back inside, and yes. It just sounds like a horrible, miserable experience because he doesn't want to move.
As he's dragging him, and this is kind of when we first get the first idea of like, oh, this is maybe worse than just like broken bones, because yeah. as he's dragging him, we can see the trail of blood underneath his yeah. legs. So it's like, oh, if the legs are bleeding that much, then yeah. it's worse than just maybe a compound fracture or something.
Yeah.
It's,
oh, yeah.
It might be like big, giant shrapnel wounds in his
legs. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and it's you can tell it's really bad.
Yeah.
And then Ray, he gets up and he is like, he's really, you know, he kind of comes to as well at this point. And then he sees Elliot. Elliot is just on the ground. He's not responding. He's not really dead. I thought he was dead.
I thought he was dead for sure.
I was like, he is dead. And like, you should just leave him because he's dead. But they didn't leave him. He grabs him and he pulls him back inside, and his leg gets caught on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tells the new guy to come and help him. They get him inside. And I was like, he's dead. What are you guys doing? But the other Gandolfini, he is working on him. He's, mm-hmm. you know, he's getting tourniquets around his legs because his legs are torn up too. They look pretty much the same as
Joseph Gandolfini Williams. Cuts open his pants, and we basically see that his legs are just,
just
cuts, it's really
deep gashes, just really, really graphic.
It's pretty grisly stuff. And again, this is all based off of what these men experience and what they remember seeing. And,
and it never felt like it was exploiting this. Like it felt like, okay, this is what they see. Like they, you know, it just seemed like this is what happens, you know, and this is what they have to deal with. And this is what they have to see.
Yeah. And while they're working on Elliot, we're still sitting here kind of going like, is he alive or not? Yeah. Is he? And honestly, I thought both him and Joseph Quinn, I was like, even though they're alive right now, they're not going to live. My, and this is sort of from my knowledge of like war films, that it's just sort of like, if you're bleeding that bad, if you're, you know, if let's say that your whatever the artery, your femoral artery is severed from shrapnel, like it's only a matter of time before you can't bleed. Like the amount of blood that's coming out of them, I'm just going, well, then you're dead, right? Like, there's no point. What's the point of, you know, of stuffing? And that's another thing is like at one point Ray Mendoza is stuffing gauze into Joseph Quinn's leg, and Joseph Quinn is just screaming, going, no, don't,
yeah, you know, like, don't touch me. Don't touch me. Yeah.
But it's like, I have to, like, I have like, and he at one point he tries to put a tourniquet on Joseph Quinn's leg, but he can't, with his gloves, he can't get the fabric.
He's shaking so bad.
Yeah.
He's shaking,
and he can't get the fabric through the buckle of the belt. So he just says, I'm just going to kneel on your leg.
Well, he says, there's another way, but you're going to feel it. And he just kneels down, and Joseph Quinn yells again. I mean, cause obviously it's like,
Will Poulter comes over and goes like, okay, hold, because he also kind of sees, again, talking about like the trauma that's happening in real time, because we can see Mendoza start to dissociate from the situation.
Yes.
In order to do what he has to do, he's sort of just staring off into the middle distance. Yep. And Poulter sees this and kind of pulls himself out of his concussed days and goes over and like pushes him off of Joseph Quinn and gets the tourniquet. Finishes the tourniquet. And then while they're in the middle of trying to get the tourniquet to fix to Elliot comes back alive. He's alive and he wakes up. And as soon as he wakes up, now he's screaming too. Cause it's
He is like, I mean, and it was interesting because he's more of the tough guy, but I mean, it was interesting to see. It was very different how they were screaming. Elliot and then Joseph Quinn, they were doing it very differently, but you know, it was horrible for both of them.
Like, yeah. There's this wild, they're both asking for morphine, and there's this, oh my gosh, this moment. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And especially if this really happened, I was like, oh my goodness. I've never seen anything like this in a war movie where
was crazy.
Gandolfini pulls out a morphine shot and goes to put it in Elliot, and he puts it in upside down, and the needle goes into his thumb. And I just was like, oh no. Cause then it's like one of your only able-bodied guys that you have now is going to be like all morphined out. He's going to like, which like, you know, and you can kind of see him be like, I just shot myself, which like the amount of morphine they're giving people who have shrapnel wounds is enough that if you're just, I imagine that there's enough adrenaline pumping through your body that even if you were all morphined out, you could still be like, okay, I'm going to push through it. Like it's going to be kind of like working while I'm drunk or something, but there's enough going on that I'll stay. Yeah. I'm not going to fall asleep. Like I'll stay awake.
Yeah.
It just complicates the situation. It's just like, oh no.
Cause then he's like, he gets another one. They give them the morphine. Yeah. That was crazy though. And you can see it in his thumb. And it's just like, how did you do that? Like,
I know. It's just one of those
things. So it's one of those things that it's like, that's so crazy that that must have happened. Like,
yeah.
That had to have happened.
Well, and it's like, I don't know if you've ever seen those things like Anna, EpiPens. Like, I can see how in a very heightened situation, you could do that upside down. And if you have your thumb over it, like, I could totally see how that could happen. And it's just like, oh no, I just shot, you know. But so they give these guys the morphine and then the guys are going like, it's not enough. But there's all this stuff that continues happening because like they're now down on the lower deck and they're still getting shot at from all different directions. There's these prolonged sequences in this movie too, where we get a break from like the screaming and the noise and the craziness. And we go to a bird's eye view of what's being seen from drones. Yeah. And while they're on the comms and trying to communicate, the comms are showing them where the, you know, kind of enemies are around them and what they're seeing who's converging on their position. But we're watching all of this and we're even watching like the other platoon move toward their position. Yeah. And we get to like watch that happen from a bird's eye view. And I thought this was like really cool too, to just kind of go, these are the multiple vantage points of what is actually being seen in a modern battle scene sequence, you know? And, and also that those moments were important too, because it gave us like an auditory break from the screaming and the gunfire and the, you know, but, they're calling in backup. They're saying, okay, we need two more cars because we've got two heavily wounded. And that's another thing is they go heavily wounded. And then Joseph Quinn goes, who do you mean when you say heavily wounded? Are you talking about me? Are you talking about me? And he goes, no, we're not talking about you, buddy. But it's like, of course we're talking about you.
Of course your legs are blown off.
You know, which we're just seeing all of these guys suffering lifelong trauma. But they do this thing that I didn't even know this was a military maneuver. And this is crazy. They call in this thing several times. It's called a show of force. These like F-15 jets will fly really low down a street. And the force of the jets is, I mean, it's like, it's basically, it's like an intimidation. But it also blows dust everywhere and it's incredibly loud. And Will Poulter, who's got a concussion, every time these show of forces come in, I just kept thinking, imagine having the worst headache of your life. And you're also in charge of a group of people who are in you know, and then you have to call in a show of force and try to like cover your ears. And it hits so hard that it just makes you like, his head's probably hurting so bad. He wants to throw up you know, and he's also got to like somehow keep his wits about him until the backup platoon gets there.
And the backup platoon does show up real quickly. I felt like this was almost like the midpoint, like somebody came, but it's really not happening at the midpoint. But they come in and the leader there, I think he's a sergeant, right? He's in there. I can't remember what his name is and who the actor is. But he comes in and Will Poulter tells him, he's like, dude, those bombs messed me up. Like, I need you to take over. And I thought that was really cool. Like, okay. Like you know, a good leader can tell you when he's not really fit for what he's doing. So this other sergeant comes in and he takes over and he like tells everybody what to do. They go back up on the second floor and they start like shooting just to try and get some cover and try to, you know, send them back just a little bit. And then, you know, at this point, they're asking for two tanks and they're saying no. And then they ask for two tanks again. And the guy says, no, we can't, it's too dangerous. The guy on the radio says it's too dangerous. We need a CO approval. And I thought I really liked this part. Cause the sergeant says, he's like, all right, he tells the comms guy, you have to pretend to be the CO and you have to order them to come in. And I was like, oh man, I don't know. Like, did that guy get court-martialed for that? Like, can you do that? Like, what? It was a very, very interesting thing that they never talk about. The radio guy goes over and you can tell, like, it's kind of like, should I do this? Should I not? Like,
and again, everything's happening so fast in this movie. Like the pace of this film is just unrelenting. Oh, it's just everything's happening so fast. And that is a big moment. But again, the fact that, like, this is based on their memories that, hey, they denied us these tanks. And the only way we could get out of there is to just say, hey, I'm the CEO, send in the tanks, you know?
Yeah.
And then they do send in the tanks, and they kind of do it by, they have to do another show of force, but they're also doing things like, they said that when the new platoon gets in, they send some guys upstairs to try to clear out some of the upper decks, because there are, you know, they're, as they call them, bad guys or Taliban on whatever, on these various rooftops. And, you know, I thought that these firefights were incredibly intense too, that out on the balconies, because it's literally, it's stuff that you've seen in movies a million times where guys are sort of shooting and then going down and then the other side shoots. But it's like, I was thinking about, like, being a kid and going paintballing and how you'll, like, poke your head out and, like, pop, 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 and then pop back. But I'm like, imagine doing that with
real guns,
you know, with machine guns, like with machine gun fire and having the guts to, like, pop up and, like, you know, and go down. And these guys have big old guns that they're shooting, but it doesn't even feel like anything's even necessarily being accomplished. And at one point, before the tanks even get there, they send guys out to get gear out of the street. And again, we go back to the gear. And one of the big pieces of gear that's in the street is the sledgehammer from the inciting incident. And they're like, we got to send some guys out. We got to clear out all of our gear out of the street. And it seems like it's a big priority for the United States military to not leave any of their material, any of their tools in a battle zone. And what was so interesting, and this is the question that my brother asked me that I wanted to ask you, like, he noticed that when they sent guys out there, once they had the extra backup, they went out there and they were, you know, they're doing this stuff where they're all, like, taking shots at the rooftops, and they've got the upper deck secured by guys up on the balcony, and they're trying to get this sledgehammer back, but they're leaving, like, body parts. There's, like, legs and stuff in the street. And he was kind of noticing, like, that the tools were almost more important than recovering the body parts. And also, and again, I think that there's that metaphor of, like the distinction being made between, like, does the military see a distinction between an expensive piece of machinery, like a machine gun or, you know, a computer, and a soldier? Or
it's interesting,
does it see them both as, like, assets that have a dollar value assigned to them, you know?
And that, I think my thought, because I noticed that, you know, that they keep running past the leg. It's very prominent. I thought that was the interpreter's leg, which I think it's a really good point. But I also wonder, like, okay, that guy is dead. Do they, but it goes into what they're saying, like, that's not important to them. That's not their soldier. That's not their piece of property. Well, that's not their anything. So it definitely is saying something.
I don't know if you remember when we finally did pull out of Iraq during the Biden administration, how there was a big controversy over interpreters who were sort of left behind in the new Taliban. And that, like, a lot of soldiers were saying, like, we want to get these guys. Those guys were part of our platoon. You know, those guys, like, fought next to us, and we want to get, we promised those guys we would take care of them. And that's still a huge problem in the collateral hangover of this war that we were a part of for 20 years, is we left a lot of people back there who helped out our military, who were interpreters for our military. And I think that this film is definitely, I mean, with them running by those body parts back and forth in the street, it really feels like, again, visual storytelling, something that's being said without overtly saying it. I think that it's in there. But yeah, we're running, I think, basically, we're in probably, when they get this sledgehammer, we're in the final act of this film.
I think, because the tanks are coming, and the sergeant says, you need to light up the second floor of all the buildings. You need to light them up. And they're like, are you sure?
This,
like,
sequence is crazy. Yeah, the tanks get in there and they go, just take your tank guns that shoot crazy tank rounds and just level the upper decks of all of the buildings in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And
they're going around and they're just shooting all the upper decks, and it's just doo, 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 doo. And again, the sound is amazing. I mean, it's loud and it's just like, it's jarring. But they just light up the whole upper decks, and then they have a show, and they say this, I think it's Will Poulter. I can't remember who says it, but he says, they're going to light up the second floor, then we're going to do a show of force, and we're going to go.
Yep.
So they do that. They light up the second floor. They do a show of force to kind of cover them, and they all go outside.
Yep.
And actually, I really loved this part too, because right before they go outside, Will Poulter's trying to keep everybody. He's trying to keep the Iraqi family down. Mm-hmm. He's trying to keep them down and just calm. And the dad is yelling at them, like yelling at him.
Of course.
And he's pushing him down. Yeah, of course. Yep. He pushes him down, and then he has to go, and he's just like, I'm sorry. And he just leaves. Which
this is so crazy that they just leave.
Yeah.
They
just leave him there. And I mean, what else are you going to do? But you can tell that he has remorse, right?
Like,
I think it's got to be a hard thing to do. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he has done.
Again, I have a hard time believing that Ray Mendoza doesn't have some kind of feeling about.
Oh yeah. Death,
and about like the people whose home that was as the co-director and co-writer of this film. Oh, I have a hard time believing that he doesn't have some that, because it does feel, it's just like what's done to those people, that it's just like they're in the middle of the night, their house is taken over by foreign insurgents and then their home is decimated. And the soldiers go out, the tanks drop their doors. Everybody gets into we forgot to mention that earlier in the film, there was we were picking somebody up, and because we got our wounded guys into some tanks, and Mendoza was putting them into the tanks, and he didn't get out in time.
Yes, he did.
So some of the soldiers get left behind, and we get some our wounded guys out. We get Elliot out, and we get Joseph Quinn out.
Which they have to put them on rugs.
We forgot Elliot, about that whole sequence. Yeah,
they put Elliot on a rug. So they turn him over, and he's screaming but he's screaming, and then they turn him over to the other side and they get the rug, but they carry out Joseph Quinn, which I thought that was interesting. They don't go into why, but
maybe there was just one rug, and Elliot's legs are way worse off than Joseph Quinn.
More severe. So it's like, they have to lift him up, and they are just screaming the entire time, which, oof. They get those two out.
They get both those guys in tanks, and Mendoza gets stuck. So I also thought this is interesting, that if we're relying mostly on Mendoza's memories, then everything from here on out, I wonder if he just had to talk to the remaining guys.
Yeah, that's what I would imagine,
But it is, I mean, they do all finally wind up getting out. They pretend to be a CO. They call those tanks back in, and they all get in the back of the tanks. While shooting the whole way that they're running out, into the street, and they're shooting at the rooftops, and they all get in the backs of the tanks, and it's very intense. And then the tanks roll out, and we just have this like the family, just sort of the family whose house it is. They just walk out into their living room and just sort of like look around at their house.
Well, and the dad is like, come out. It's okay. Come out. Like, he's like, it's done. It's over. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, what? And but he's just looking at all the destruction.
Yeah, the upper floor is gone.
Yeah.
That's completely destroyed. Their house is completely destroyed. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah.
And these soldiers, just like, and that's why I say it bookends the movie, because the first shot is it's silence in the middle of the night, and the soldiers just sort of roll in, and we're dropped into it. And the last thing we see is our soldiers roll out, they drive away, and then all of the Taliban guys the Iraqi, they all sort of like slowly walk out of the houses that they were in, and they all just kind of look around. Like, and I guess that's it.
Yeah, they just walk around, and it just cuts to black.
And that's it.
That's it. And then you see pictures
of
all the people. Some of their faces are blurred out.
It says for Elliot.
Yeah, it says for Elliot. And then you see kind of the real Elliot show up on set, and he's in a wheelchair. And then you see pictures of all the soldiers. And like I said, some of their faces are blurred out. Some of them are normal. But
what was your take on that? Do you think that they asked these guys and some of them just said, no, thanks, I don't want to be involved.
Yeah, I wondered if it was that or if they're still active, but maybe they're still, enlisted or whatever.
Some of them maybe have died since
possibly. They showed one guy, it looked like he was a consultant, and his face was blurred. because he was like doing military moves. Yeah,
he was on set working with the guys on set, and his face was blurred. So it's like he obviously.
I thought like, I was like, he's probably still active. Whatever he's doing, he didn't want to see it. But they either said, no, I don't want to do that, but I'll give you my. Who knows what it is? Why? But I did think it was interesting. They still showed the picture, even though it was a blurred face. But it was, to me, it was just like, this was a real person. And this guy played him. You can't see him, but that's who he was. Like, it is a real picture. So I liked it. I thought it was, it gave it even more of a grounded feel. And like, wow.
I think one of the craziest things about this story is that everybody made it out. All of the American soldiers made it out alive.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if there's any element of this that's maybe like a rah-rah propaganda, go American military thing, it's showing how efficient and effective the American military has become at protecting their own. Like, there's a reason why the death toll is so uneven in the Iraq war, that like, it's like, you know, the numbers that we took, the casualties that we took, pale in comparison to the amount of Arab people whose lives were lost in that 20-year war. Right. And the sort of efficiency of the American military machine is definitely on display in this film. So I definitely, it's not like the accusations of the film being a propaganda movie about how cool the American military is are completely unfounded, because it definitely is like, these guys are incredibly efficient and incredibly good. Like, the whole movie, I kept thinking, surely some of these guys are gonna.
That's
like, I thought for sure Elliot was dead. I thought that new guy, like in a typical movie, like, oh, the new guy who's nervous, maybe he's gonna die, or, you know, typical screenplay structure, they would set something up where like, oh, the guy that didn't take the shot earlier, he's gonna die. The guy that he didn't shoot's gonna kill him, like Saving Private Ryan style. Yep. Like, it's gonna come back to, but like, they all make it out of there. The interpreters don't. And I think that kind of, again, the message that you're left with is like, at the end of the day, the people who suffer the worst are just these sort of the people whose neighborhood this was. And it's just
once the movie was over, and you know, this definitely seems like a movie that is saying that war is hell, right? And I forgot to say this, but even there are drapes in the movie that you see constantly that are red, and it gives everything a red tint. And I have no idea if this was intentional or not, but that's what kept coming to my head, is there's like red drapes and they're like, it looks all red. Like, are they saying that war is hell? Like, this is hell. They are in hell right now. You know, and I mean, I don't know if that was intentional or not. Maybe that's just what they remembered and that's what it was, but that's what kept coming to my mind.
Sure. I mean, it definitely doesn't seem like a pleasant place to be where they were for the duration of that movie. And again, this is like a 90-minute movie. It's the pace is unrelenting from the moment that grenade goes in through that hole. It is foot on the gas. And even when the movie ended, I thought, wow, like that just blew by. It felt like the movie was maybe like an hour long, because it just was
quick.
Yeah, it was moving so fast. But I you know, overall, I found this movie, like you said, to be very effective and kind of technically mesmerizing and completely engrossing. I was completely just engaged the entire time. And there's a lot to think about. Because it's not so prescriptive, because it's not trying to force feed you a moral or an idea, there's a lot to just sort of chew on about what you've just witnessed, and it sort of allows you to draw your own conclusion, which is again how I felt about the movie Civil War. But let's get into our scores.
Let's do it.
For this. If this is your first time watching our show, we do scores out of 10, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst. We give a technical rating. That's just for how well the movie was constructed at a technical level, the craft of the film. We do a rating for the ending, how well we feel like the movie stuck the landing. We do a rating for rewatchability, a rating for cultural significance or relevance, you know, the cultural impact of the film, and a subjective score. So, Kramer, for Warfare, what is your technical rating?
My technical rating, I'm giving a 9. This movie was just technically amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I thinking of trying to make a war film and how you have to keep track of everything, how you film it to make it look like it's real. Everything in this felt very, very real. And it was so the way that they shot it, the cinematography in it was all very, very top notch. And then, I mean, the production design, everything, all the technical aspects, and then really the sound design and the sound mixing and everything was just so good. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I should give it a 10, but I mean, it really was amazingly well constructed and done. And it's not really a linear, or it's not really the traditional structure, but it has everything in there. It has a beginning, middle, and end, and you get to where you need to go. It's a very simple form of an arc, but that's in no way is that a negative.
Yeah, I gave this a 9.5, and I think that I love the book ending of that opening shot, yeah, and the end, the way that it sort of opens with like stillness and quiet, yeah, and I mean after the prologue, I mean, and ends with just sort of like the stillness of the yeah, end of the chaos, that it's got this big storm in the middle. I also just think about like the execution of an idea, and it, yes, feels like the exact movie that Raymond Doza and Alex Garland wanted to make, they made. They, yeah, executed their concept perfectly in my mind. Yeah. It's like the exact experience that they were going for, whether you like it subjectively or not, whether the structure of this film works for you on a subjective level or not, they made the movie they set out to make. It's not like it's not like Tombstone, where it's like, okay, this movie sort of got chopped up in the edit, and yeah, maybe this isn't the movie, yeah, that they set out to make, but do you like the movie that wound, yeah, up getting made anyway? It's like, this is the exact movie I think that they set out to make. I think they, yeah, executed, yeah, their idea really, really well. So 9.5, yeah, from me. And again, could be a 10. Yeah. Maybe it should be a 10. Yeah. I'm not sure what they could have done better. The ending. What'd you give the ending?
Yeah, maybe it should be a 10. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe it should be a 10. I'm going to say 10.
I'm going to go 10 too. Honestly, I don't know what they could have done better. I know. Really, it's exactly. I mean, if anything, some of the acting a little bit, but it's still the acting. I thought it felt very realistic. So I'm, yeah, it deserves a 10. It does.
Yeah.
We've changed our scores. That's what it is. Take it or leave
it. Feels like you always got to like leave a space for like,
yeah,
the best move. But I'm like, we're just talking about the technical execution. Yep.
And that really does deserve a 10.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the ending.
Okay. The ending, I gave a 9.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I take it off is because it's like, it comes really quick. And it just ends. They get in the tanks and they're done. And everybody's like giving thumbs up and everything. But I give it a 9 because it fits so perfectly for the movie. Mm-hmm. They get out. That's it. They're done. And then, like you said, the bookend is pretty brilliant. Like,
yeah.
So I gave it a 9.
They roll in, they roll out.
Yeah.
And everything in the movie is everything that happens in between. I gave, yep, the ending a 9 as well. I felt like it was just a very strong ending. I've seen people criticize the ending of this movie. I've seen people say it just, yep, sort of ends in the middle of the film, but the rest, and I'm like, no, it doesn't. Like that's the movie.
That's
like
the end.
Like,
yeah.
They got out. Like they got everybody.
That's what they're building to. They are, yeah, building to getting out of that area in tanks.
I think that people are just used to some kind of denouement. Yeah. They're used, yeah, to some kind of falling action where we see them reuniting with family members, or you, right, know, something like, or we see the you know, the cost afterward. Like we would go home and see Elliot with his leg gone, you know, and,
yeah,
like,
yeah, would,
but it's like, that's not this movie. That's not, no, what this movie is. This is the right ending for this movie, in my,
exactly,
opinion.
Exactly.
And so rewatchability for this film.
Okay, rewatchability. I gave it a 3.
Okay.
Now, the reason being, I loved this movie, and it is done so well. I don't know if I really want to watch it again.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so traumatic. And just like you said, like, you see the trauma, which is, you know, it's a great movie. It's done so well. But I'm not too interested in, like, revisiting this.
Sure.
And rewatching it and watching it every year at, you know, on July 4th or whatever. It's like, it's a hard movie to watch. There are some movies that I love, but I don't ever want to see them again because I'm glad I saw it. It's kind of like, you know, Requiem for a Dream. Like, that movie is amazing. I don't ever really want to see it again, but
sure,
So this is kind of in that category. Now, that's not going to be for everybody. This is my personal score for rewatchability, because I don't want, I'm fine if I don't see this movie again. I could watch it for sure, and I would have a good experience, but I don't really care too much to see it again.
My rewatchability score is still high because I do, you know, there's a handful of war movies that I will revisit over the, you know, I've seen Saving Private Ryan probably six or seven times in my life.
I love that movie.
And you know, again, these are all films that can be hard to watch for various reasons.
Yes.
And like I said, this is a well-worn genre. There's a lot of different movies in this genre. This movie jumped into easily my top 10 of this genre that I've ever seen. I like the uniqueness of this film. I like that it's doing something that I haven't necessarily seen. I know, I mentioned those films that have tried something like this before, but I don't think that they've done it this well. I think that
I
think when it comes to, if I'm in the mood to put on a war epic, this would be one that I would be willing to put, you know, especially if I'm thinking of showing a movie to someone like that's interested in movies about war. This is one that I would be willing to go to. So it's still high on my list. How about the cultural impact of this film? What do you
think? What did you give rewatchability? What was the actual
score? I gave it an 8.
Oh, you gave it an 8. Okay.
8. Yeah.
And I could rewatch it. I don't know. 3. Anyway. Okay. Cultural impact. The cultural impact, I've given it a 7. Actually, I should give it an 8 because I think it will have an impact. I think this is a movie everybody who's seeing it, it's not doing like amazingly at the box office, but I think it's doing what they expected and it's doing well. But I do think that this is a movie that they're going to reference. And I think this is also a type of movie that can have a real impact on future filmmakers.
Yeah.
So
I gave this movie a 7 because I don't know.
Yeah,
like you said, we're just in such a weird era where like people just don't go see things, and so I can definitely see. I would like to see this referenced in you know, as the years pass, as like a great war film that ages well and that continues to be noticed for different little details in the visual filmmaking, and I could see it in time becoming one of the great war films, like an Apocalypse Now or Full Metal Jacket, or because you know I see those elements in here and I hope that it does have a lasting cultural impact. So I gave it a 7. And how about subjective score?
My subjective score, I gave it a 9. Love this movie. I thought everything we talked about, I think, speaks for itself. It's a really, really great movie. Go see this in the theater for that experience and to get that feeling at the absolute most that it can be. And that's going to a theater and seeing it. So I think everybody should go see it.
I'm right there with you. I am at a 9 with this movie. I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I do think that Alex Garland makes these kinds of films in a way that's open to your own personal political leanings. If you want to see it as a tear-jerking patriotic testament to the power of American exceptionalism, I guess you could see it as that. If you want to see it more as a thing that's critiquing the American war machine and the way that it can sort of commodify lives and boil lives down to a number on a sheet and assign a dollar value to lives. But because what I see in the movie, that's that the heart of the film is the brotherhood amongst the men, that it's like regardless of what the American military industrial complex thinks of them, they think of each other highly and they care about each other, and that's what comes through in the film to me, is the human to human connection. And you can see that in the filmmaking, in my opinion, that they also do care about, you know, what's happening to these other people, but they're just sort of trained to prioritize each other first.
Right.
And it's an interest, you know, the way that war kind of makes gives you these black and white, you know, dichotomies of good guys and bad guys and stuff. But I really enjoyed this movie. Let us know if you saw this movie, what your take is on the politics of the film, what your take is in general on the structure, the atypical structure of the film. We're going to start letting you in on what we're going to be doing in advance so that you can watch along with us for the next episode. Next week, There's a new season of Andor coming out on Disney Plus. So we decided we were going to do a rewatch of Andor season one. Yes. Might be a lot to watch, but if you want to kind of follow along and you want to follow along with the discussion for next week, we are going to be watching Andor season one. Yes. So you can watch that, I believe, with a Hulu subscription or with a Disney Plus subscription, or a bundle subscription there. Yeah. And in preparation for Andor season two, we'll be kind of doing a breakdown of Andor season one. So
yeah, it'll be an interesting one because we don't really see eye to eye on this one. So.
I know a lot of times when we both like the movie, our scores are always very similar, but this is a series where like, it's one of my favorite series ever. And you don't particularly like it. So we'll see how the rewatch goes and we'll talk about why I like it and why maybe you don't still.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Great.
I'm excited. But,
yeah, that's what we'll be doing next week. So join us then and, like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. And we will see you next week.